welcome to this sixth and final podcast in a series about investing in emerging markets into the new decade. It's fair to say that the emerging market universe of today looks very different from that of the 1990s. And indeed, the various economies that make up emerging markets have come a long way, and their rapid development has been nothing short of astounding. In previous episodes of this series, we spoke about the outlook and trends, growing wealth, digitalization, and healthcare in emerging markets. Today, we'll focus on the emerging market debt universe, and we'll do so with Peter Becker, Investment Director at Capital Group. Warm welcome, Peter. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Mariah. Thanks for having me.
Peter, tell us, how has the emerging market debt universe changed in the last, say, 20 years? And what was the main driver for this change?
Yeah, I mean, the first point to make here is that emerging market debt as an asset class has been an evolving asset class over the last couple of decades, and we expect this to continue going forward. This asset class has grown continuously in the number of countries issuing debt and the volume of outstanding debt. And in some areas, it has matured into a large and liquid fixed income market. But there are also countries that move up in the spectrum. Other countries that are very early in the stage of their development that enter the market. And so currently we have about or even more than 60 emerging market countries issuing debt. And the investable universe is more than $6.5 trillion US dollars in assets. Secondly, within the sector of the asset class or within the sectors, there are some meaningful changes to the universe that happened particularly over the last decade. So in the 90s and early 2000s, these countries borrowed primarily in US dollar, but borrowing in a foreign currency made issuers vulnerable to not being able to pay back their debts. And we've seen countries defaulting on their debt because of that. So as some of these countries developed along the income spectrum, and as their financial systems developed, they began to issue debt in their own currency, and in some cases steadily replaced external debt with local currency debt to reduce their, one, foreign exchange risk, and two, their exposure to shifts in foreign investor sentiment. So today, this local currency market is actually the predominant issuer base within the asset class and the market with the greatest degree of depth and liquidity. In addition, there is also a thriving and growing market of other sectors such as EM corporate bonds, quasi-sovereign bonds, and inflation-linked bonds that are part of the investable universe. So the market has, over this time period, over the last 20 years or so, really evolved into a very diverse, broad, and deep asset class that offers many opportunities for active investors.
Right. And how has EMD been faring in the current environment? Have you seen many changes because of COVID? And were there maybe some countries that have really surprised you?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So what we've observed during the early days of the pandemic was how the handling of the pandemic was quite different in many of the emerging markets compared to the developed markets. So most of the emerging markets didn't have the strict lockdowns that the developed markets had to endure. This is for a number of reasons, but in particular because most of them probably couldn't afford to go into strict lockdown. Equally, most of those countries don't have highly developed health systems that need to be protected. This resulted in the economic downturn in these countries to being significantly less severe than in the developed nations. However, it is interesting to observe now that in coming out of the pandemic, a lot of the developed nations have a reasonable vaccination program in place, whereas many emerging market countries are behind. And this has slowed their recovery process. So after the strong recovery in developed economies this year and the rebound in commodity prices, there's an argument to be made that EM countries will catch up over time, and that would be good for the asset class. But the recovery has different speeds in different regions and from country to country, depending on vaccination rates but also flare-ups in infections, for example. So this is another argument for active management and fundamental research to understand these countries from the bottom up. We are not worried about the systemic health of the asset class, but some countries are still at risk of default, and avoiding them is one key to success in this asset class. And with regards individual countries that have surprised, it is really depending on how strict these lockdowns were in some of the countries that were, in particular in the Asian countries, some countries that were very disciplined, whereas in other regions, countries were not. And those countries that were stricter in the implementation of restrictions and lockdowns have also recovered a lot quicker than others. So, for example, China is one of the countries that has moved out of the pandemic a lot quicker than other countries.
Mm. And what has fiscal stimulus been like in the emerging markets? And have these programs been able to influence yield at all?
Yeah, so on fiscal, it is probably worth mentioning that pre-COVID, many of the EM countries were actually in a quite a solid position in terms of debt levels and fiscal deficits. Many of these countries had debt levels that were lower than in the developed world. So there was some room for fiscal stimulus in most countries, and most countries actually have used that room, some even with the explicit help of quantitative easing. After an initial increase in local yields, the yields in most countries actually fell to historically low levels last year. This year, we are seeing yields moving up again. And in some countries where the starting point of debt levels was higher and long-term growth prospects are limited, such as in Brazil and South Africa, those yields increased more than in the market as a whole. But you know, yield increases also mean that value is coming back to the market, and that should make the local market in particular, again, more attractive for investors. In US dollar debt, countries that had very weak debt profiles to start with saw a spike in their spreads and yields, and some countries had to default on their debt. But in other countries, this was an investment opportunity. So differentiation through fundamental analysis was definitely key last year and will be going forward.
Mm. And would you say that there is an increasing risk at inflation in emerging markets now that the global economy is recovering?
Yeah, inflation is not so much an issue in emerging markets than in the developed world, where we have seen this huge spike in inflation data throughout this year. And inflation management actually has significantly improved in many emerging market countries, and central banks have potentially learn from their experience. So surprisingly for some, central banks in some emerging market countries have already started their hiking cycle to get ahead, how we call it, ahead of the curve. And this is very unusual to hike for EM central banks to hike before the developed market central banks, and in particular before the Fed started their hiking cycle. But we believe that this is a good sign. First of all, central banks are credible in their inflation management, and also secondly, create some room in case economic momentum is slowing. So I mentioned inflation in emerging market debt in emerging market countries is not as much a problem as in developed markets. The pickup there has been a lot less on average than in those developed markets. But again, there's some variation between countries. Some really have the problem that inflation is picking up, and the central bank has to decide between letting inflation run or slow the growth momentum by hiking more aggressively. That's not an easy decision to make.
No. And do you think that the hunt for yield will remain a key driver for EMD?
Yeah. If we look at the developed markets yields, there was some upward pressure in the markets this year. So you could argue that yields are more attractive in developed markets than maybe the last few years. But yield and income are still hard to find in those core markets. So investors continue to be on the search for income and yield sources. And EMD is one of the few areas left within the fixed income spectrum universe where investors can find that yield. So both US dollar emerging market debt as well as local emerging market bonds have meaningful yield pickups over US or Euro core bonds. And on the local side in particular, where we've seen more upward pressure on yields over the last 10 or 11 months since the beginning of the year, yields look actually quite interesting for yield-hungry investors. So yes, we believe the demand for the asset class will continue to be strong, and this should also be supportive for the asset class.
Mm. Now, EMD's credit quality has been rising for many years in a row. Would you say that the pandemic has broken that upward trend?
Yeah, so we have certainly seen some downward pressure on credit profiles during the pandemic, given the rising debt levels around the world, really. But I wouldn't go as far as calling it a broken trend. So okay, looking at the universe a little bit more in detail, the larger markets were actually not that impacted, and just a few countries such as South Africa and Mexico were actually downgraded by rating agencies and only by one notch, so nothing meaningful. We saw more downgrades in the smaller markets, for example in Africa and elsewhere, where debt levels increased and were becoming more concerning, and we also saw some defaults of countries that needed to restructure their debt. Having said that, with the projected recovery in growth and the higher commodity prices, we believe debt levels are likely to improve going forward in many countries, and therefore there is a good chance that this upward trend could resume.
Right. Now, Peter, the IMF has been worried about the difference in growth between emerging and more developed markets, reasons being twofold. Firstly, the vaccination rates are substantially lower in emerging markets. And secondly, both fiscal and monetary policies, like we just said, are a lot less generous in emerging than in more developed countries. Besides the uncertainty about economic growth, there's also the risks of growing debt and interest risks in emerging market bonds. How do you look at all this?
Yeah, so first of all, we look at, you know, growth rates and potential growth rates going forward. And as I mentioned before, if growth in developed markets continue to be robust, even though it's slowing down a little bit, we expect it to be quite robust into the next year. There is the case to be made that emerging market countries will catch up in terms of growth. That should help debt levels, but it also creates risks in terms of inflation pressures building further. And that's what we have to consider. But, some of that is already reflected in the yield levels of the market. So the yield of the local currency market has reversed from the pandemic easing. So last year we've seen yield levels falling to record low levels. And now this year yields are increasing and are now actually 50 basis points on top of the pre-COVID levels. And relative to US dollar emerging market debt, for example, on a like-for-like basis, EM local is starting to look cheap. We believe emerging market central banks have done a lot to get ahead of that inflation pressure, as I mentioned before, and probably need to do more as inflation has not yet peaked. But we are starting to lean towards emerging local now, and will add if yields continue to rise.
Right. In May 2013, the asset class was heavily corrected after an announcement of the Federal Reserve on tapering. And that happened again in 2018 when the Fed increased interest rates. And expectations are that the Fed might taper again within the foreseeable future. What does this do with an asset class such as emerging market debt?
Yeah. So first of all, I think 2013 was a very different situation compared to where we are now. In 2013, many emerging market countries were still in bad shape and more vulnerable due to their external balances. But this has changed. And today, more countries have current account surpluses, for example. Now, what we also think and see so far is that the Fed and other central banks have learned their lesson from previous episodes, such as the taper tantrum in 2013, and are very careful in their rhetoric and communication with the markets. The Fed has been clear in their last meeting that the taper will start actually this month, but they have clearly communicated the pace of the taper and the potential end date if nothing changes. So there's less uncertainty around that. So we don't expect major disruptions from that gradual reduction of asset purchases. But indeed, there could be periods of volatility during that taper window. But at the moment, we think those periods could potentially create some interesting buying opportunities rather than creating systemic problems.
Right. And what about vaccination rates? Because they create a strong divide between maybe more attractive and less attractive countries, right?
Yeah, it's twofold. So I would say yes and no. And on one hand, we've seen countries with higher vaccination rates recover more quickly. I mentioned China. But then you also have to look what is priced in terms of the recovery. So, for example, some of the emerging market currencies of countries that have low vaccination rates and a slow rollout of vaccination programs actually look quite attractive from a valuation perspective. So you really have to assess what is the situation in each individual country and what is priced in, and look valuations attractive. So this is really something you have to weigh before making a decision whether a country is more or less attractive.
Let's look at the opportunities in EMD, and I want to put it this way. Suppose that EMD was a supermarket. I wonder what would be the great deals in your advertising folder, Peter?
Yeah, I like that. It is an interesting supermarket, first of all, with lots of variety in terms of products and items to buy. During the height of the pandemic, we found most of the bargains in that supermarket in the hard, I would call it the hard currency aisle, where we believe that the sell-off created a mispricing in some of those countries, and our fundamental analysis showed that they could survive the period due to, for example, bilateral or coordinated programs. And these were the products in our supermarket that are harder to get or harder to find, so to say, the smaller and less liquid markets, for example, some of the African frontier markets. And our experience trading these markets helped us building those positions. So now these mispricings have largely disappeared, and these positions have played out, and we are finding value elsewhere. So where are the bargains today in our supermarket? I mentioned local currency, where yields are starting to look attractive. So we like the now local currency aisle more.
Lots of good deals there.
Go shopping there. Pick and choose duration, for example, in some higher quality Asian markets, but also some of the LATAM markets where yield curves are still relatively steep are attractive. So we're building a bit of what we call a risk bubble there. And the most attractive area is even another aisle in the corner of the supermarket, which is the EM currencies, where those currencies, a lot of them, hover around historically cheap levels. And if growth in EMs surprise on the upside, there's probably also some upside potential in these currencies. So given what I said just now, we're starting to build positions in the local currency aisle, so go shopping there, and have trimmed some of the high yield rated US dollar positions.
Now, to your point, indeed, emerging market local currency debt has at times provided higher yield than its US dollar dominated counterpart. So can we say that a weaker dollar actually benefits emerging market local currency bonds?
Yeah, that's correct. So, but first of all, to compare local currency yields to US dollar yields, you will need to adjust for differences in, you know, the investment universe or the index composition. There have recently been times when the index yield of local bonds was lower than hard currency debt, so US dollar debt, and that was unusual. But the comparison on an index level masks the fact that the indices have different constituents and hard currency has a lot more lower rated countries. So if you adjust for that, you will find that local yields have consistently out-yielded US dollar emerging market debt. And more recently, this gap is actually widening. So that's why we like local currency debt. And regarding the dollar, yes, it is correct that emerging markets do better in a weaker dollar and stronger EM currency environment. And typically in a positive global industrial cycle, EM currencies should do better. Interestingly, this year that wasn't the case because the US grew stronger than the rest of the world, which had an impact on the dollar. But there is a chance that this might change if the Fed doesn't tighten prematurely or too aggressively.
So when we translate all of this into the investment opportunities, everything that we discussed today, what would you say, Peter, is key to successfully invest in emerging markets? How do you think that investors can benefit most?
Yeah, so maybe some key takeaways for listeners from this. First of all, what I try to convey is that emerging market debt is a diverse and growing asset class that creates many opportunities for yield and return seeking investors. Valuations are attractive in some areas of the market, and fundamentals of countries should improve going forward if global growth continues to be relatively robust. But there is a lot of variation in the credit profiles of countries, the yields, the yield curves in local markets, and in currency valuations. So we believe this is a market that should be approached actively and through fundamental research. And in that case, portfolio managers have flexibility to pick countries where credit profiles have the potential to improve, which should be reflected in the price for the country's bonds. They can evaluate currency valuations on a case-by-case basis, and it allows for hedging positions to manage exposure. It allows for managing duration exposures actively depending on the fundamental outlook for a country. And investors can choose from a variety of other instruments such as quasi-sovereign bonds, corporate bonds, and inflation-linked bonds. And finally, active management gives investors access to some of the early stage and turnaround situations that are not yet reflected in the standard indices and can have a positive impact on return outcomes, something that passive approaches can't offer.
Cannot do. Now, one thing we have not touched upon just yet, so maybe as a final question, how are ESG issues relevant for investors in emerging market debt, Peter?
Yeah, as we all know, ESG issues are becoming increasingly relevant as this is currently on top of investors' minds. The good thing here is that for research-based investors such as Capital Group, these factors have always been part of our research process. So, for example, climate change-related weather shocks or something like mass protests triggered by income inequality can dampen economic growth or slow down necessary structural reforms. So ESG issues can and have directly led to higher borrowing costs or weaker currencies. Evaluating ESG risks and opportunities is and has been a core part of our investment process. It is not a necessary, add-on. And more recently, we have formalized our ESG approach also for sovereign bonds, and our analysts on-the-ground research together with constructive engagement helps us evaluating these risks and opportunities to make more informed investment decisions for our clients. Mm.
Many thanks for being here with me today, Peter, and for talking with me about emerging market debt and all the opportunities. Thank you so much.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
You listened to a podcast on investing in emerging markets into the new decade. And I would like to thank today's guest, Peter Becker, Investment Director at Capital Group, for his time and his insights. This podcast is offered to you by Capital Group. Now, if you'd like to learn more about investing in emerging markets, please visit the Capital Group website, capitalgroup.com/NL. And for more podcasts, please visit the Fonds News website, fondsnews.nl/podcast. Thank you for listening.
This podcast has been recorded in November 2021 and the information presented is for illustrative purposes only. While Capital Group uses reasonable efforts to obtain information from third-party sources which it believes to be reliable, Capital Group makes no representation or warranty as to the accuracy, reliability, or completeness of the information. Any opinion, estimate, or forecast is subject to change. This communication is of a general nature and not intended to provide investment advice or to be a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Statements attributed to an individual represent the opinions of that individual and may not necessarily reflect the view of Capital Group or its affiliates. Emerging markets are volatile and may suffer from liquidity problems.